This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome to
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into Prop Points here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Nick Whale and Jeff Erickson hanging out with you. We got a big show coming for you on this Tuesday afternoon. Some news to get to in baseball. Had a small Monday slate, but still some big results to talk about. Got a full Tuesday slate coming our way. We'll play a game of Rate That Prop coming up later in the show. Talk through a couple NBA Finals props, some MLB props for tonight. And look, it is never too early to be talking fantasy football. Our friend John McKechnie is going to join us at about 2:30 p.m. Eastern. We'll talk some best ball with him, some players he likes, some players he's staying away from. And of course, we'll finish out with Jeff's favorite bets for the Tuesday Major League Baseball slate. First, though, Jeff Erickson, we got some news, some troubling news, at least from our perspective, in the sports betting industry coming out of the state of Illinois. Earlier today, Illinois officially passed a $55.2 billion budget that notably includes a betting fee, a tax, if you will, of 25 to 50 cents per wager. Now, the sports books will be paying the tax, Jeff. We'll talk about what that may mean for the consumer in a bit. But essentially, the first 20 million individual bets placed in the state of Illinois will carry a tax of 25 cents apiece. Every bet placed after that will have a fee of 50 cents. So still kind of piecing through the rubble here, figuring out what this is going to mean, but not great news on the surface if you are a bettor in the state of Illinois.
Yeah, and ultimately a bettor anywhere else, because you know it's going to be monkey see, monkey do with other states. This is, you know, middle of the night, sort of under the wire, their chance to kind of slip this one in. And it's the total type of thing that Congress Critter is going to do. They're going to try to attack quote unquote syntax, if you will. They're going to find, you know, this is why you see, like, you know, high prices on your flights, your hotel bills, people that are not defendable. Bettors are probably in that range. That's why you see high alcohol taxes going towards things of that nature as well. Unless they view that a constituency is going to bite back at them and hurt them at the ballot box someday, this is, we're going to be targets. It's really unfortunate to see it like this. And make no mistake, the sports books may initially pay that price, but it's going to get passed on to the consumer, whether it's in the form of worse odds or different structures, different limits, things of that nature. Matt Brown earlier had a segment on that, who can articulate this a lot better than I possibly could, and did. It was really a fantastic segment. You should check it out. It's a real problem for the industry, and it's a real problem for trying to keep the sports wagering legislated, keeping it above board in the books, as opposed to going to offshore books, things of that nature, or you're a guy down the street. This is going to detract from that. It's going to make things worse as far as that goes.
Yeah, you're right to point to Matt's segment earlier today. You could find that. I know they tweeted it out from the VSiN account at VSiN Live on Twitter. And you said the important thing here, Jeff, which is that the sports books, like any business, would find a way to pass this along to the consumer. And that could come in the in the form of worse odds, fewer boosts, fewer promos out there. There's now little incentive for sports books to take low dollar wagers, $1-$2 bet. All right, you're paying a 25 or 50% tax on that. So I think the casual bettor, the low dollar bettor, which is the vast majority of us out there, is who will end up being impacted most. And, like you said, the fear is that this will end up pushing consumers away from the traditional regulated sports books into offshore markets, into prediction markets, things of that nature. So we will see how it plays out. We'll see if other states end up following suit, but wanted to address that off the top. Let's get to some baseball news, Jeff. Like we said, we got a full slate coming our way after a light Monday. Saw the New York Mets get a big win over the Dodgers last night. That was a 4-3 result. Won that one in extras. Dodgers still doing just fine. They're still leading the NL West. They're still favored to win the World Series, but 5-5 now in their last 10 games. Mets have the best record in the National League, second best record in baseball, behind only the 40-21 Detroit Tigers. 4-game winning streak now for the Mets, have won 8 of their last 10. And Jeff, Juan Soto had a nice weekend, had a couple homers against the Colorado Rockies, of course, but still hitting just 167 over his last 20 games. I mean, the Mets are doing this without any sort of the production they thought they would be getting from Juan Soto.
That's right. And not only that, but they're also Sean Manaea hasn't thrown a pitch yet. You know, Frankie Montas hasn't thrown a pitch yet. They're doing this without two of their projected five starters. You know, Tyler McGill's going to start tonight, and his hold on the rotation spot is rather tenuous. But, they got great work out of Griffin Canning. I know he had a blow up outing recently, but way better results from that they should have possibly expected from them. There are so many things that could still go right. Mark Vientos hasn't had a good start to the season. You know, Francisco Alvarez missed the start of the season and hasn't hit for a whole lot of power yet. There's still things that they could get better at. That's the scary thing right now if you're in the rest of the National League. The Dodgers are having major problems in the bullpen. They lost another reliever over the weekend, Luis Garcia, the other Luis Garcia, the former Angel, former Red Sox last year. He's now on the IL. So they've got at least six relievers out of their top eight that are on the IL right now. And it's just that we learned that, you know, they've are not going to get back a lot of some of their other relievers. It's a tough spot that they're in right now. No Blake Treinen for a really long period of time. Kirby Yates has been hurt lately. And on top of that, the guy that they thought was going to be their best reliever, Tanner Scott, who they gave a $72 million contract to over 4 years, has really struggled in the last 2 weeks. And he's ballooned to over an ERA over four. He started that stretch like an ERA in the low ones, and it's just been really, really tough. And he has struggled again last night.
Yeah, it will be very interesting to see where the Dodgers pivot in that bullpen. I mean, some names perhaps emerging off the IL in the coming weeks, but in the short term, we'll see. Alexis Diaz could be in the mix at some point, Jeff. He's still down at AAA, hasn't even made an appearance there quite yet as they try to work through some things with his delivery. But despite the Dodgers being the Dodgers, they're just fine, but still not quite the dominant regular season record perhaps we thought they would have at this juncture. Dodgers still plus 280, by the way, to win the World Series. Mets 8-1. Dodgers plus 155 to win the National League, and they are massive favorites right now, minus 575 to win the NL West. Jeff, the hottest team in baseball yesterday remains the hottest team in baseball today. The Milwaukee Brewers ran their winning streak up to 8 last night. Most dangerous team in baseball right now, Jeff?
Most dangerous team in the state of Wisconsin right now. Most dangerous team playing in the state of Ohio this week. How about that? They're in Cincinnati right now, and they own the Reds. Christian Yelich has a hand injury. No problem. Comes back and has another big game. Absolutely owns the Reds, especially in Great American. And they're on this roll. This is what the Brewers do, Nick. They underwhelm you in the offseason with what they do. They may even get off to a tough start, but somehow the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And by the way, I butchered that saying all the time. But I finally got there. They find ways to maximize their talent, whether it's Craig Counsell that's the manager or now Pat Murphy. They're better defensively than most teams. They find a way to beat up on the lesser teams in baseball. You know, they run into one of the better teams, the Cubs, the Dodgers, the Phillies, the Mets. Typically it's a struggle. They swept the Phillies over the weekend. So even then, they're starting to beat some good teams, but usually they make their hay off the middle class and the lower class. They usually pound the Pirates into submission and they beat the Reds pretty thoroughly.
We may have more on that Brewers-Reds matchup tonight later in the show when it comes to our GBank best bets. Are you still using your buddy's gut instinct as your betting strategy? Come on, you deserve better. RotoWire has the real tools the pros use, rankings, projections, updates, and data that doesn't sleep. Whether you're making picks, setting your fantasy lineup, or placing bets, our award-winning insights give you the edge you need. Get started today by heading over to rotowire.com and entering ROTO15, that's ROTO15. Enter ROTO15 at checkout. You'll get 15% off any RotoWire product. All right, Jeff, I want to go a little off script here because we had some news in Major League Baseball. Corbin Burnes officially expected to be heading to the IL. Still no real detail as far as the specifics of this elbow injury, but never a great sign when you have a pitcher, beckoning to come out of the game, swearing into his glove. Did not look good the other night for Corbin Burnes.
No, and it's never a good sign when they're going for a second opinion on said elbow either. That usually means the first opinion is not so great. They just want to confirm that it is what it is. And we'd had concerns before about Burnes. And then he righted, and he missed his start earlier, remember, with the sore shoulder. And then he actually was better after missing that start. He said he found his cutter again. Well, maybe in the process of finding his cutter, it did something to his arm, or maybe it was already happening. And it might have been just the last, like the last string snapping there, if you will. And the Arizona Diamondbacks pitching is in a really bad way. Good article by Ben Clements over on Fangraphs today discussing it. We heard Money Moves talking about Zach Gallen. He pitches tonight, and it's always good to fade Zach Gallen. I know that, unfortunately, because I have him in the NFBC main event. Didn't even love him at the time I took him, but I thought, okay, he dropped far enough. Let's take him now. And it has not been fun at all. Their bullpen is in shambles too. Kevin Ginkle was really bad after coming back, got sent down. They're in a tough spot to try to make the playoffs.
All right, one last news item, Jeff, on the injury side of things. The New York Yankees expected to place Luke Weaver on the IL. Could happen today, could happen tomorrow, some point this week. But the expectation is that he could miss upwards of a month. Does this pave the way for Devin Williams to work his way back into that closer job?
It does, and he's been better, generally speaking, lately, but not perfect. We saw him get that bumpy save against the Angels, for instance, but he's had some better outings since then as well. I might keep an eye on Fernando Cruz as well. If you're looking to speculate against Williams kind of going back into full form, maybe that's some sort of timeshare, that might be a route to go back, in, at least in terms of fantasy there. In terms of just looking at the Yankees, I don't think it hurts the Yankees that much. You know, it could cost them maybe a game is the way I look at it there. But for the most part, I think they'll be fine. Mm-hmm. We'll be talking a little bit more about the Yankees later on today, too.
Yeah, Yankees home for the Cleveland Guardians tonight. Carlos Rodon putting that 2.6 ERA on the line going up against Tanner Bibee. Like we said, we'll have more Major League Baseball plays coming for you later in the show. We're going to head to break. When we come back, rate that prop. Talk some NBA Finals, some MLB props for tonight. Do that next. You're on Prop Points.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points. Jeff Erickson and Nick Whalen here from RotoWire.com, live from the Madison studios today. We are going to do a new thing. We tried out last week and it clicked pretty well. We think it's called Rate That Prop, where we our intrepid producer, Michael Cohen, has gone out and finded some carefully curated props for us to evaluate there. Maybe even got a little action out of there. We know. Who knows? Nobody will ever know. But let's start with the basketball here, Nick. Let's start off the game one of the NBA Finals on Thursday. Tyrese Halliburton to lead the finals and made threes at minus 125.
All right, so we talked a little bit about this market on the show yesterday, and this is what we have to do. Look, when we have like a five-day gap, you know, with no games, we can't quite dig in on game one yet. So we got to look at some of these series-long props. I'm giving this one a 3 out of 5. So it's generally in betting territory for me. It's not something I'm rushing to the window to place. And, you know, I think a big part of the reason this one makes sense is that Tyrese Halliburton has taken by far the most three-point attempts, not only of any player on the Indiana Pacers, but of any player in this series. He leads the Pacers in attempts through the first three rounds, 28 more attempts than Aaron Nesmith. However, Tyrese Halliburton is shooting just 33% from beyond the arc in the playoffs. Aaron Nesmith is shooting 50% from three, and Nesmith actually has more makes despite taking 28 fewer threes than Tyrese Halliburton. So, you know, when you look at the round by round breakdown, Aaron Nesmith led in makes, Halliburton led in attempts in round one, Nesmith led in makes and attempts in round two, and then we saw Halliburton and Nesmith co-lead in makes in round three against the New York Knicks, and that was with Tyrese Halliburton taking 19 more threes in that series than Aaron Nesmith. So I think the odds make sense when you look at the volume for Tyrese Halliburton, but I think the Thunder are going to attack him defensively. I think they'll be picking him up three quarters court. I think as soon as he crosses half court, they're going to try to get the ball out of his hands. They're going to be hounding him all over the place. And Tyrese Halliburton is not necessarily somebody, you know, like an Anthony Edwards in the West Finals, who's always looking to hunt that shot. You know, he tends to let those opportunities come to him. And I don't know that there are going to be that many clean looks available for Halliburton in this series. So to me, there's more value on Aaron Nesmith, who's been the far more efficient shooter. I'd rather bet that at plus 425, maybe even look at a sprinkle on someone like Lu Dort, who leads the Thunder in three-point attempts in these playoffs at 102, 17 more than any other player on that roster. Would also take a look at Jalen Williams at 11-1. He has the second most attempts so far for OKC, but seems to be finding that shot in the Western Conference Finals. So not quite enough value there for me on Tyrese Haliburton. That's why it's just a 3 out of 5.
Yeah, and I was even going to suggest the Oklahoma City prop side of things just because of that reason. They're so good at defending the three. We saw what happened to Anthony Edwards in the previous series, how much it really hurt him to go up against that defense there. So, yeah, I like that for quite a bit. Let's move on to the next one. Chet Holmgren to average 10-plus rebounds per game, plus 120. Rate that prop.
So even though this is plus money, I'm still giving this just a 2 out of 5. Now, yes, Chet Holmgren did average, you know, just over 10 rebounds per game in the Denver series, but he did not have more than 7 rebounds in any of the 5 games against Minnesota in the Western Conference Finals. You know, you have some level of minute concerns for Chet Holmgren. You know, he's won the lion's share of the minutes over Isaiah Hartenstein, at least to end the Western Conference Finals, but you know, it's still essentially a timeshare, right? Neither of those guys, you know, you're penciling in for like 38 plus minutes every single night. They like to use both. I think we do see more of Hartenstein in this series. You have other capable rebounders on this team. You know, sometimes they'll play Chet and Hartenstein together. Hartenstein is a better, you know, per minute rebounder than Holmgren. SGA, Jalen Williams, they both rebound their position very well. Yeah, again, I do think we see plenty of Chet Holmgren in this series, specifically to guard Pascal Siakam, but you do worry a little bit about foul trouble there. Siakam will be aggressive. You know, he was averaging over 7 free throw attempts per game in the Eastern Conference Finals. The Thunder as a team actually do foul at a pretty high rate. So maybe part of this will depend on how this series is officiated, but all those questions to me add up to a 2 out of 5 here. Plus 120. Yeah, it's decent price, but I need a little more juice if I'm going to run to the window for this one.
All right, I like it. I'm with you on that one. I would avoid that prop as well. Pascal Siakam to average 20-plus points per game, minus 170. Not a great price here, Nick Whalen. Rate that prop.
I'm going 2 out of 5 here. This was almost a 1 out of 5. I'm going to be honest. Minus 170 Ooh. For something that Pascal Siakam has done only one time in 3 rounds in these playoffs. It's just not it for me. And now he's facing the toughest defense in the NBA, by far the toughest defense he will have faced at any point in the postseason. This is a defense that just held Anthony Edwards, of all players, to 23 points per game and had 3 out of 5 games where he was under 20 points. I know Siakam was great in the Knicks series. He had 3 30-point games. He ended up being the Eastern Conference Finals MVP. I just don't see that happening against OKC. You know, those leak-out baskets, those fast-break opportunities, those transition points, those tend to dry up against Oklahoma City. I think it's going to be really tough sledding. I think Pascal Siakam is going to have to earn every single point he scores in this series. And yeah, in theory, OKC is better suited to defend guards than they are rangy wings like Pascal Siakam. But I think they're going to be swarming him every time he gets into the paint. They're going to be sending, you know, second, third defenders at Siakam. And like I mentioned with Chet Holmgren, it's going to come down to how this series is officiated. You know, OKC does foul at a fairly high rate. Will they be able to get away with those traps? Will they be able to slap at the ball? I would say for the most part, they have been able to get away with that. I think the officiating has been friendly toward their style of defense. And look, if that's going to continue to be the case, then I do think Siakam is going to struggle to get to those 7-8 free throw attempts per game that he probably needs to average 20 in this series. So the Pacers probably need Pascal Siakam to score 20 plus per game if they have any chance to hang around. And there is a reason, Jeff, that my best bet yesterday was OKC to win this series in 5.
All right. I don't love hearing it, but I accept it. I accept it. And I actually think you're probably right about that. I was hoping we're going to get our first ever one and rate this prop, but well, I don't think we've had a one yet, have we? All right, not today.
I don't think so.
All right. Want to bet smarter this football season? Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a full year for just $199 plus a free pre-order of the NFL Sharp Betting Playbook by Josh Applebaum, a no-nonsense guide to reading the market, spotting sharp action, and making smarter NFL bets. Sign up now and get instant access to a daily email with all the best bets from hosts and their guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, and 24/7 video access on the VSiN Watch app, plus our 2025-26 NFL betting guide, which drops July 1st. Don't miss out on this limited-time offer. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe and use promo code BOOK to sign up. That's VSiN.com/subscribe.
All right, Jeff, we don't discriminate when it comes to rate that prop. We diversify a little bit here. So we got 3 NBA leans in the books. We now move on to Major League Baseball. We will start with Paul Skenes. He's on the mound tonight for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Rate that prop. Paul Skenes over 6.5 strikeouts, getting that at plus 125.
Yeah, and just to quick point out that shop around for that that price, because I've seen that price drop. So you have to, at least on DraftKings, it's a little bit of a lower price now, and it's a little less favorable. Still going to play it when we get to our baseball segment, actually, later on. But Astros, they don't strike out a ton at 20.6%, but it's more than you would think. And still no Yordan Alvarez. He had that set with his hand injury, so that's a big part of this as well. It's another right-hander for Skeens to be able to face, or Victor Caratini, as the case may be. They're not going to have a good, solid middle-of-the-lineup bat in there to face Skeens. It's 22nd in baseball, though, so it's not like an extreme no-strikeout team. Skeens has topped that prop in the last three outings, and that's against teams like Milwaukee, Philly, and Arizona, who do not strike out a lot, 18, 25, and 27th, respectively, in strikeout rate. So the fact that the Astros don't strike out a lot doesn't put me against this. Shouldn't dissuade me from going this way. So I'm going to rate it a 4. I like it. I'm going to play it.
All right. Rate that prop, Jeff. Cal Raleigh, who has been far and away the best catcher in fantasy baseball this season. Cal Raleigh to hit a home run tonight. We're getting that at plus 260.
Yeah, and that's the controlling factor here. Plus 260 is just a terrible price, I feel like. Usually on my home run props, I'd like to be like plus 350 or better. Get a decent-sized payout. I understand. He leads baseball in home runs. They're facing a righty, which means he'll be batting lefty. Only 8 of his 23 homers have been against left-handers. So if you're looking at it from that standpoint, it's Tomoyuki Sugano who is actually someone that allows a lot of home runs at 11 home runs, but I'd prefer that he be facing a lefty when going in this situation. And maybe he will later in the game as one of the Orioles bring their relievers in later in the game. And that's still part of the equation. But for plus 260, it just steers me away. So that's why it's only a 3, and it's pretty close to a 2. It's like yellow-orange on our dial there.
All right, we got about 30 seconds for this last one, Jeff. I know we'll keep it simple. Aaron Judge, over 2.5 hits plus runs plus RBI tonight. Plus 105.
Yeah, and that's a high price for sure. But we're gonna make history and rate this prop, Nick. First ever 5 of 5 for me. I'm Whoa. Definitely playing this one here. One solo homer takes care of it. That's all it takes. At home, finally, after a long road trip, they had the day off yesterday. He's well rested. Going up, in this situation here, it's going against Tanner Bibee, who has been a little homer-tastic at times. I think this is one that he can get. He doesn't have to get the homer to reach it there. There's a lot of different ways to get there. You walk so much, you also are on base, which means you score runs. I think he can get there. 5 out of 5 for me.
All right. Talking to
That's
football,
wrap
John McKechnie
up. This.
Joining us next here on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson here with you, rolling along. And we're going to talk some NFL best ball. It's maybe a little too early to be doing your regular redraft leagues, but if you want to get some fantasy football drafts in, it is fully best ball season. And to give us some takes, to give us some overvalued players, some undervalued players, we have our friend, our NFL expert over at RotoWire, John McKechnie, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. You can check him out on Twitter at John's_tailgate. John, good to have you back, man. We'll dive right in. I was talking to you earlier this morning. You said you are, quote, workshopping, in your words, a couple of interesting takes near the top of the board when you look at current ADP. Let's start with Jahmyr Gibbs. Tell us why you think Jahmyr Gibbs, John, could be the RB1 in best ball and how high you're willing to take him if you believe that's the case.
Well, I think that the time is now. I think that last year we saw Dave Montgomery get hurt in the Week 15 game. And from Week 15 through Week 18 last year, Jahmyr Gibbs was RB1 both in PPR and in standard scoring. I just think the toothpaste is out of the tube. Like, you can't put it back in. Like, Montgomery, a nice secondary piece to have in that backfield. But it's time for Gibbs to really fully take over this backfield. It's an offense that, if you look at the Vegas implied totals over the course of the entire season for this year, one of the top three projected scoring offenses in the league this year. I think Gibbs is going to have a huge part in that. I think that he's more than just a PPR asset. Like I said, he was able to get it done both in standard and in PPR scoring. So whether you're playing on a site that favors one of those or the other, I think Gibbs is a safe bet that way. And I think you look at the opportunity cost of you know, who the other top running backs are. Obviously, Saquon Barkley is, you know, logically being drafted as the first running back off the board right now, but coming off a ton of work, long season, having played all the way through the Super Bowl, tush push still allowed. So there's going to be some rushing touchdowns potentially taken off of his plate. I think Gibbs has a very good chance of leaping Saquon, being the number one fantasy running back this season. And therefore, I'm willing to take him as high as number two. And I wouldn't even necessarily argue with someone taking him first overall if they had enough Jamar Chase shares to begin with.
Yeah, the NFFC, we've seen Chase go number one overall in every single draft so far in the RotoWire Online Championship. So we'll see. Wow. That diversification kicks in at some point. I want to talk about the wide receiver too, Justin Jefferson. You have some concerns about him reaching that level with J.J. McCarthy at the helm. Please go on and elaborate.
I do. I think that this offense is just going to look a little bit different this year with McCarthy. I mean, McCarthy in and of himself, a guy that, you know, had to sit out last year while nursing that knee injury. And, you know, they were in a situation where they weren't going to be able to run the ball a ton. You know, Aaron Jones had a fine enough year, but Sam Darnold was in that kind of like perfect season, like that perfect storm in this offense, you know, kind of a contract year, a prove it year for him there in Minnesota. McCarthy, the guy for the future there, obviously, but we never really saw him turn it loose during his time at Michigan. And that feels like a while ago now. I think there was only one or two instances during his entire college career where he had to throw it 30 or more times. So I think that inherently we're going to see a less pass happy offense. And I think that it's fair to expect some, you know, even though it's his second year, technically, some rookie learning curves. I think it's going to be hard for McCarthy to completely maximize Justin Jefferson to the point where he ends up being a top three overall producer. And of course, the second best receiver. I'm much more inclined to go with someone like a CeeDee Lamb, a Puka Nacua. And it, frankly, it wouldn't surprise me if Justin Jefferson were outscored by the likes of second year guys like Malik Nabers or Brian Thomas.
Folks, the final jewel of the Triple Crown is here, the Belmont Stakes, and there's no better time to bet the races than right now with First Bet. New users could get a $200 sign-up bonus. Just use the promo code VSIN200, that's VSIN200. Whether you're a seasoned horse player or brand new to the sport, First Bet has all the tools to elevate your game. Download the app or go to firstbet.com/VSIN to sign up right now. That's firstbet.com/VSIN, and make sure you use that promo code VSIN200 to get that $200 bonus. We're here with John McKechnie, a man who I'm now realizing is wearing a very similar shirt to me, John. I can assure the viewers that we did not plan this. He joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. John, you were kind enough to put together a list of your five best and five worst values in best ball. So I want to dive in on that and take a look at a pair of receivers who you have under the microscope. So let's say you're in a best ball draft. You're looking for a receiver. It's round three. How do you value someone like Devontae Adams versus a player like Rashee Rice, who tends to go slightly higher?
Right. So Rice is obviously intriguing because it feels like the opportunity is going to be there. It seems like Travis Kelce kind of in the twilight of his career, but Rice himself is coming off of a knee injury. I know that it's not as significant as other season ending knee injuries that we've seen in the past. So we feel good about his availability for week one, but this is an offense that's a little bit in flux when it comes to Kansas City. Wouldn't be surprised if they run the ball a little bit more. And of course, Xavier Worthy, someone who's getting drafted not too far after Rashee Rice, you know, he's also going to be a big factor there. So I think it's just the market is saying that Rice is the slam dunk number one option in Kansas City. I'm just stopping short of that. And on the other side of that coin, you know, Devontae Adams, not to say that he's going to immediately take over and be a higher target share type of guy than Puka Nacua, but Rams ponied up $26 million guaranteed for him this year. We don't know if he's going to be, you know, still on the Rams in 2026, but we're playing for 2025. I think that Adams showed, especially down the stretch last year, that he still has the goods. Matthew Stafford noted for being kind of a fantasy kingmaker. I think Adams is a great fit. I think they really needed a second option opposite Nacua. I think Adams is that guy. So for me, for a slight discount relative to Rice, give me Adams.
Do you think that Adams could actually be the first option with the Rams? And we were talking about this in the context of Puka Nacua today on the SiriusXM show. I have some concerns that Nacua, where he's going in the first round, end of the first round in best ball or in redraft, I'm not so happy to take him there at 9 or 10 where he usually goes.
I wouldn't be completely shocked either. I think, you know, a reason why Nacua fell in the draft to begin with was durability concerns. He showed those last year after kind of what ended up being a perfect rookie season for him. So Adams a bit more durable. I do think that there's at least an outside chance that Adams ends up leading the Rams in fantasy receiving production. And certainly to the point where the chasm between the two, where Puka Nacua is a late first round guy and Adams a mid third, I think that the market's a little bit off on that. I think that Adams is more deserving to be an early third round type of guy.
John, it pains me to say this, but I believe we're on the same page when it comes to Travis Hunter. And look, as a Jaguars fan, I hope to God I'm wrong, but I will not be taking him at his current ADP. I think most projection systems are way overweight on Travis Hunter. If you're of the same mind as me, who's another receiver that you like more in that general ADP range?
Right. It's just, everyone loves Travis Hunter. Everyone loves the idea of a two-way player, a guy who was so electrifying during his time in college, Heisman Trophy winner, of course. But you do the projections, and it's like, can you really envision him seeing much more than like 15% of the targets there in Jacksonville? Whereas in the case of someone like Zay Flowers, coming off 25% target share for one of the most high-scoring offenses in the NFL, one that's projected to be, once again, one of the highest-scoring offenses in the NFL, I want a piece of that offense more so. I want the number one option in that offense. I believe Zay Flowers is that guy more so than Mark Andrews is now at this particular stage. So there's too much that can go wrong in the case of Travis Hunter. I want the floor more so with Zay Flowers. And I think with the opportunities that he gets, the four touchdowns that he logged last year, I think end up being sort of a something that regresses to the mean. I think that, you know, he's someone that pushes for 100 catches and pushes closer to 10 touchdowns. So Travis Hunter, as fun as he is, I'm just going to be watching that one from the sidelines. I'm not investing a mid fourth round pick in him.
John, let's talk running backs real quick. Old versus new, we always have this battle, rookie versus veteran. Joe Mixon is 51.4 in ADP over at Underdog. Meanwhile, RJ Harvey, the rookie for the Denver Broncos, is at 54.3. Which one would you rather have at that price?
I'll take the young buck in this particular case. Mixon was someone that I was all over last year, and his production for the most part up until the fantasy playoffs was better than I could have even hoped for, even as a big Mixon guy. But I think we saw the wheels kind of fall off a little bit towards the end of the season last year, whereas RJ Harvey, he lands in an absolutely perfect spot in Denver. I think that it's pretty easy to project him being the number one running back option in Denver, an offense that we think is trending in the right direction. Harvey, obviously, a good bit younger than Joe Mixon. Mixon kind of had some outlier under the hood numbers as well last year that I think are going to be pretty difficult for him to replicate. So I'd much rather be out a year too early than a year too late in Mixon's case. Give me the young guy and RJ Harvey instead.
John McKechnie, everybody, check out his great work for us over at rotowire.com. You can hear him weekly on the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. John's _tailgate is his Twitter handle. We got some breaking news in the NBA. We'll hit that on the other side with some Major League Baseball bets up next on Prop Points.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson, bringing you home, taking you up to the top of the hour. As always, make it rain with Adam Schein coming up next here on the Sports Betting Network. He's going to have Zach Cohen on from VSiN.com, giving out his best bets in the NBA, taking a look at the French Open. So not going to want to miss that. Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard. That's coming up after Make It Rain at 4 p.m. Eastern. And Matt Eumanns and Will Hill manning VSiN primetime tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern start. A lot of great things coming your way the rest of the day here on VSiN. Jeff, we got some baseball bets to get to, but in the last 5 minutes, we just had some big breaking news in the NBA. I'm going to use the exact phrasing of the Shams Charania tweet here. The Knicks have relieved Tom Thibodeau of his duties, meaning they have fired Tom Thibodeau, their head coach. Tibbs, of course, signed a 3-year extension with the Knicks last July. So less than a year later, Tibbs already out. Knicks, of course, will be on the hook for the 3 remaining years of his contract. I'm not shocked, Jeff. I don't know that I agree with this decision. I've been critical of Tibbs throughout the playoffs. I thought there were plenty of moments, especially in the Eastern Conference Finals, where it certainly felt like Tibbs was outcoached. You know, there's been some criticism as far as, you know, not digging deeper into that bench during the regular season. All of a sudden, you're scrambling with a finals berth on the line, trying to find guys who could contribute. But this opens up, you know, a really interesting question as far as, you know, where do you cast the net for this search? There are a lot of Villanova players on this roster. Jay Wright does not currently have a head coaching job. He works for a television network. Could he be in the mix? But now a turbulent summer ahead for the New York Knicks.
Yeah, I was shocked by this because I actually thought that he adjusted well as the Eastern Conference Finals progressed. You know, they made some adjustments there. Maybe it reeked of desperation to start Mitchell Robinson, but I thought that was a ploy that had its effectiveness there. He brought other people into the rotation. Should he have done that earlier in the regular season? Absolutely, he should have. But it wasn't like the Knicks players were breaking down. This wasn't a case like last year where they had tons of injuries at the end of the playoffs. I thought they were relatively healthy, all things considered. Yes, Cat banged knees in game four, and that affected him later on for sure. I guess that probably is an issue there. I'll say this. When a team makes a big swing like this, a big move like this, they better have a target in mind. You know, if this is just to have a change, I think it's an awful, terrible decision. They must have a target to take him to the next level.
You would hope so. You would hope so if you're a New York Knicks fan. And look, the last thing I'll say on this, Jeff, is it feels like a knee-jerk reaction based on how the Eastern Conference playoffs played out. You know, I think let's say that they had played Indiana in round two and they beat the Indiana Pacers, but then you go on and lose to a healthy Celtics team. Well, let's just say that happens. Jason Tatum injury never happened. Celtics beat the Knicks in 5 or 6 games. I think we feel differently about this season, right? I think you would say, all right, we beat the teams we were supposed to beat, and then we lost to the best team in the Eastern Conference. I think it's a direct reaction to the fact that the Knicks were favored over the Indiana Pacers, to the fact that they look at this series and say, we should have won this. We think Tibbs may have cost us this series. And to me, that's just a little bit misguided. You know, it's more about, you know, how the chips fell and the order of the teams that they played. Had they bowed out to a team that was viewed as superior to them, I don't think we see Tom Thibodeau on the street without a job right now. But nonetheless, Tom Thibodeau relieved of his duties as the head coach of the New York Knicks. Let's move over to the Tuesday baseball slate, Jeff. We had a light slate on Monday, but full slate coming our way tonight. Let's start with maybe the series of the week so far. The Mets on the road at the LA Dodgers. Mets, of course, won in extras last night. Seeing the Dodgers as a -142 favorite on the money line. Total coming in at 9. Tyler McGill taking on Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah, that's where we want to start, is focusing on the pitching matchup here. Just talking about the Dodgers pitchers, we spent some time talking about how their bullpen is in shambles right now. 6 relievers on the IL, Tanner Scott struggling every time out, it feels like. Because of that, and because Clayton Kershaw really can't be counted to go on more than 5 innings, even though he's pitched very well in his last out and he did go 5 innings against the Guardians, you can't really expect any sort of decent amount of length in the game from Kershaw. So when that happens, when they start hitting the rest of that bullpen, as they hit heavily, I mean, you know, Kasperius, Draper, you know, they've thrown a combined 70 plus innings already this year. These are the guys that are expected to be their 9th and 10th relievers, basically. And they've had to dig that deep. So it's because of that that I'm concerned that they're going to bring out some people that are ill suited to face the Mets. I don't have a whole lot of faith in Tyler McGill against the Dodgers. I think he walks too many batters, and that's going to lead to maybe a short leash for him, even though he might get some strikeouts. I'm tempted both the strikeout prop and the walk prop for McGill. Those are at, by the way, at 5.5 at +115 for the strikeouts for the over, and the over 2.5 walks is at +110. I think both of those are intriguing, but my like quote unquote official play is the over on the total at 9 -122. One other injury note, Mookie Betts should return to the lineup tonight. He's going to play through a broken toe. I'm kind of curious to see how that goes.
Got two teams in the NL West going at it tonight, the Padres and the Giants. Giants minus 162 favorites on the money line. Lower total here at 8. This is Ryan Burgert going up against Landon Roop. No, you're looking at a money line play here, Jeff.
Yeah, I am. And I think that the Padres are significant underdogs at plus 136. The Giants are minus 162 on the money line. And that's because of the pitching matchup there. Ryan Burgert's making his first major league start. He's only thrown four major league innings. He is a bit of an unknown. I just think this is a good price, though. I think Roop is kind of dicey a little bit there. A whip over 1.4, and some of that's a little unlucky, 327 BABIP, but he's also walks 8% of the batters he faces. I think the Padres will probably be able to work out a number of these walks. So I think the total is interesting at 8, and I think that you're getting a decent value, plus money value for the Padres at plus 136. So I'm going to go that route.
All right, we have suddenly an interesting pitching matchup tonight, Jeff, in the Astros-Pirates game. This one in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh minus 162, another minus 162 favorite on that money line. Houston plus 136. It was a shaky start to the year for Lance McCullers. Last two starts have been a completely different story. 20 Ks for McCullers across those last two. He goes up against Paul Skenes tonight, Jeff. I know you're looking at strikeout props for both of these starters.
Yeah, I am. And we talked about Skenes and rate this prop over 6.5. And I like it. And again, check your prices where you can find a good price. Michael was able to find plus 125. It's been bet down. So it's now like minus 110 right now, or minus 105 for Skenes. But Skenes has hit that number in his last three starts. We talked about this earlier against teams that don't even strike out that much very well. I want to focus here on McCullers a little bit. Two really good starts, 12 and 8 strikeouts respectively in his last two starts. After that disaster outing against the Reds where he just couldn't command his curveball. Yeah, you know, he's coming off a long injury layoff there and trying to kind of work his comfort into that, controlling that curveball. Just didn't have it in one particular night. Pittsburgh strikes out 23% of the time over the last 30 days. That's even an improvement over their season, but it's still not great. In fact, it's one of the ones we want to attack on a regular basis. And we're getting a nice price at 5.5 Ks, is, I should say, a nice line at minus 110. Pirates still 80 WRC plus and 290 WOBA in those last 30 days as well. So McCullers should get enough outs, should last long enough to be able to hit that strikeout prop.
All right, let's hit one more before we get to our G-Bank best bets of the night. Jeff, the Diamondbacks on the road at the Braves. Zach Gallen going up against Spencer Strider. What are we looking at here on the Atlanta side of things?
We're looking at Zach Gallen, and I'm averting my eyes on Zach Gallen, unfortunately, because that is my NFBC main event team once again, and he's had three good starts all this year. The rest of it, you know, the K percentage is down, the batting average against him is up, the quality of contact against him is much worse, 45% hard hit percentage there. It's a really tough look to watch Zach Gallen pitch when he's not facing a New York team, basically. So I'm going to go. I don't really trust Spencer Strider right now. I don't know what to expect. He could be great, but he also could be, you know, just very mid. So I'm not going to deal with the money line or the total, but we will go with the Atlanta team total at over 4.5 at minus 115.
Our best bets of the night are brought to you by GBank, introducing the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. All you need to do is open a GBank Visa Signature credit card and in the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger that $500 trifecta. You'll receive $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa Signature credit card. First Bet will give you a $100 deposit match, and VSiN completes the trifecta with a free VSiN Pro subscription through August 31st. That's a $200 value. It's the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. Head over to VSiN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. This one-time promotion is limited to customers opening a new account in response to this offer and will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today. Terms and conditions apply. All right, Jeff, GBank best bet of the night. What do we like?
We're going to basketball. You know I like the totals and Pacers games. I'm going to go the under 231. The theory of the case is Thunder's defense is something the Pacers haven't seen. And yet this total is a lot higher than it was in their games against the Knicks. So give me that under 231 at minus 108.
All right. I am going back to the well on Major League Baseball, Jeff. The Brewers money line, plus 110 against the Reds. Hottest team in baseball. They've won 8 in a row. I think they're pushing that to 9 with Freddie Peralta on the hill. Milwaukee 26-10 straight up in Cincinnati over the last five seasons. That's going to wrap it for the Tuesday edition of Prop Points Make It Rain with Adam Schein. Coming up next, stick around here on VSiN.